seated, please. Court is ready to hear argument in 05-1100, Naomi Guevara versus Corazan Labio Ferrer and Aaron Asani of Arturo Labio.
Mr. Chief Justice and Justice of the Court, may it please the Court. This is the case that gives you the opportunity to overrule the legal sufficiency holding of Morgan versus Copy Graphics. Alternatively, you could sustain that holding. I would submit to you that the reason this is so easily and so obviously a case for overruling is because this case presents you with two completely different worlds. A world pre-Havner, a world back in the 80s that I would characterize as basically we will accept at face value expert testimony or competent lay testimony that makes it relatively obvious that causation occurred, versus a post-Havner world where that's anything but the case. I would describe a post-Havner world as saying, number one, reliability is the touchstone. If the expert testimony on causation isn't reliable and we're going to test for it rigorously, then we're not going to say it's legally sufficient evidence. Where we will approach with special skepticism those theories on causation that are not peer-reviewed or published. And where, number three, we will not permit post hoc policy reasoning just because something wasn't the case before the exposure or accident, and it was the case afterwards, that's causation. Havner rules that out. And fourth and finally, a world where you have to exclude the other plausible causes that could have explained the alternative to the causation theory proposed. This case presents you with a perfect opportunity to say Morgan's legal sufficiency holding cannot be squared with that world. It is diametrically opposed to it. And what I ask this court to do is to fashion a rule whether you have the choice of to say all cases for medical causation must have expert evidence to support medical causation, or permit some exception, and we can talk about that. In either event, this rule has to be brought into compliance with the post-Havner world, because the alternative is a jurisprudence that simply doesn't work. It is dysfunctional in the extreme. And while I know there is a natural reluctance for stare decisis reasons to change a rule of this court that goes back to 1984, this is the perfect case for saying that where the world no longer works the way it used to, and our jurisprudence has progressed and changed as radically as it has, where we now rigorously test for the reliability of medical causation and scientific causation, we have to change this rule.
But there are clearly some cases where Medina and his Cobra Mustang.
I think that goes back to the old world, Your Honor. I think the old world can't be squared with Havner.
So you have to have a doctor to come in and say that.
I say that for two reasons. This court's doctrine of no post hoc reasoning for experts or in any other context, you can't square with that rule.
Doctor going to know it was caused by the car. Green's broken leg.
Sure. Well, first he will rely on the witness's testimony that I didn't have a broken leg before the accident. I do now. And whatever other corroboration. That's typically a history.
But if he's going to rely on it, seems like the jury should be able to.
As part, but not as legally sufficient.
And So really what you're saying is that we've got to have an expert look at that break and scratch my head saying, gosh, is this really consistent with a tire? Car running over somebody as opposed to a forklift, as opposed to a garage door, as opposed to falling off the roof. That's really what doctors need to be doing.
Well, they wouldn't have to do that, Your Honor, but they would in the easy case that I think Justice Green's example is, an expert would have no trouble at all being able to say, in my medical opinion, this injury, maybe not others, but this injury, the actual broken leg, was due to the auto accident.
But I bet you they don't look up the medical literature to see what kind of leaks, what kind of breaks cars cause rather than garage doors. I bet they just take that on claim says, I just got run over by a car.
That's probably true.
And if that's what's really going on, do we really need to Does Habner require us to add a whole bunch of background and research on those cases, too?
Well, I'm not saying Habner has to be fully implemented on medical causation. I'm just saying you can't ignore Habner completely. And that's what Morgan does. That's what Morgan does. And it seems to me, in the easy case, there's no special burden on the plaintiff to have an expert witness. I mean, I can imagine a world where the medical records might be able, in your hypothetical, to establish causation. The doctor says, I did surgery to correct the broken leg caused by the accident. It may be that everybody and his brother would agree that's sufficient, and that will never get challenged and won't come to this court.
In this case, were there just no medical records, or did nobody get them?
There were no medical records for the first 3.5 months, starting with this accident. There are medical records 3.5 months later, and that's the medical records that create alternate causes.
Earlier, but I mean, yes. I understand that the plaintiff testified he went in for abdominal surgery immediately. We asked, what hospital was that and request them, and the hospital didn't have them, or what? How come there's nothing there at all?
Well, they're not in the records. I don't think counsel's going to tell you that they were not available. They will tell you that they were not offered by the plaintiff. And I would suggest to the court that under the proper rule, where reliability is the real issue, you would look with substantial skepticism when there was an absence of all medical records to establish what the surgery was for, what happened in the accident, and what the course was, especially when someone's coming to you with a damage claim of $1.1 million in expenses. So I think there ought to be inherent skepticism whenever you don't have an expert testify, and you ought to have double skepticism when there is a glaring reliability problem like no medical records.
But I haven't looked at them, but what do the invoices say about that 3.5 month period?
There are lots of invoices for lots of procedures, but there's nothing that anyone has ever claimed would establish causation.
But you're saying legal causation in Morgan.
Yes.
We would have to say that a reasonable jurist, not within the reasonable contemplation and understanding of the juror, that if you have an accident, that you go to the hospital and get some kind of treatment. Now, you say a juror can't know that? We can't let a juror know that?
You can let a juror know that, but you can't let them substitute that inference for legal sufficient evidence of causation.
Legal sufficiency of causation, that they went to the hospital when they got run over.
Exactly. I mean,
now, there's a difference between Morgan, where we have fumes.
Right.
Juror may or may not know that. Now, we've said that they may, and that's what you're arguing, but isn't there a difference between fumes and how that might affect the body and a car wreck where you get mangled?
Sure.
Legal sufficiency and factual sufficiency seem, but you're wanting us to say no legal sufficiency, just to tell a jury of 12 people they got mangled in the car wreck, and they went to the hospital, and they got treated, but we're not going to allow you to tell us that was, at least to that part. Now, maybe 3 months or 6 months, the spleen and the surgeries and all of that, but that's factual sufficiency, isn't it?
Yes. You can't do that if there are other causes in the medical record that haven't been ruled out in any other context. So why allow that in an auto accident context?
Legal sufficiency says you get zero. You're saying that a jury of 12 people cannot find that there was that he had to go to the hospital.
Isn't that what you're asking us to say?
Yeah, exactly. I am saying that it is no major burden to require some expert testimony to establish causation in this context, where we require it in a major way in every other context. And the reasons for that, I believe, are common, and that is no post hoc fallacy reasoning. And I think that's the reason Morgan makes the mistake it does. It is incredibly seductive to say, I know that an auto accident causes someone to go to a hospital. That's something everybody knows. Okay? But that still can be, or that still is, post hoc fallacy reasoning, because it may be the cause or it may not be the cause. In this particular case,
cause of what?
The cause of whatever damages they are seeking at trial.
Oh, we're talking about medical expense.
We are.
The medical expense of going to the hospital following an accident.
Well, we're actually talking about abdominal injuries and then $1 million worth.
No, we're talking about no medical expense, legal sufficiency, right?
No.
We're talking about We're talking about any medical treatment at the hospital.
I don't think I understand the court's question.
For us to say legal insufficiency, we have to say the juror cannot know that after an auto accident you have to have some medical treatment. Don't we have to say that?
I don't think you have to say that as a matter of law. I think you have to say before we'll let a jury make that inference, we have to have competent evidence on which them for them to base that conclusion on.
David here, under the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, reasonable and necessary.
Right.
What the gap is the causation gap.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about an example where there's an accident, you feel you've been injured, no question that the defendant was negligent, and you go to the hospital to get checked out and the hospital clears you? Are you entitled to medical bills for that examination without having to get the doctor to say, I examined him because he said there was an accident, although I found out injury?
If they prove their case by a preponderance of the evidence, yes. If they don't prove their case, no. In that
prove
instance,
what? I mean, the case would be the reason for the medical bills was this accident that was caused by the defendant. I'm not saying I was injured,
but I was examined. Okay. The question is, says who? Who says that the trip to the hospital was caused by the accident?
I do.
Okay. And
the defendant hit me, I went to the hospital.
Okay. So
why do I need a doctor?
A per se rule that in every auto accident case where someone goes to a hospital, we are going to permit a recovery of at least some damages is the rule that articulates, Your Honor. I don't think the court wants to go there. It guarantees
we're going to require in every single personal injury case the medical.
You don't have to do that. I believe that's the best practice, but you don't have to do that. The court can overrule Morgan and just say there has to be reliable evidence of medical causation in every case, and reliable evidence of causation cannot be based on post hoc fallacy of Morgan or, number two, the existence of other plausible causes that are not ruled out. If you give me a scenario where there are no other plausible causes for him going to the hospital and there's no post hoc fallacy,
what's the
I don't
evidence
have a
of other plausible causes here?
There are a host of other conditions established by the by history.
Plausible causes of going to the hospital. What other plausible? Now I understand you're saying once you're at the hospital, he may have presented with multiple problems that weren't.
His hypertension was probably not caused by the car accident.
I think that's right. It was pre-existing.
I understand, but in terms of what caused him to go to the hospital, what other evidence is there that this wreck didn't cause him to go to the hospital?
Again, that's not defendant's burden. The question is, did the plaintiff put on evidence to say
you've got an ambulance that takes you directly from the accident to the hospital?
Yes.
Why is it not the accident that causes you to go to the hospital?
Isn't that reliable?
It may be reliable, but it may not be accurate. It may not be true. It may be accurate, and it may be. It might appeal to our senses as reliable, but why make the assumption? Why guarantee that it is going to be established as causation? But in the when we don't do that in anywhere other context.
Well, okay. So plaintiff says, I went in the ambulance because I was hurt in the accident, and why isn't that enough? I mean, you said we don't need medical testimony in every case, but why wouldn't then the plaintiff say it? I was hurt, I went in and had surgery.
Okay, I'm gross speculation now. Again, not our burden. It wasn't put on by the plaintiffs in this case. But if someone had a history of heart problems, of kidney problems, and respiratory problems, and frankly didn't have the money to go to the hospital, gets into an auto accident, and his son-in-law next to him says, this is it. We now get to go to the hospital, and you get to get taken care of.
But can't you take care of that on cross-examination? I mean, then you go through all that and say, well, you've had this history, and isn't that a fact question for the jury?
This particular person could not do that. He was dead at the time of trial. And so he neither testified to his immediate subjective awareness of being injured, which in the normal case you'd have, and he couldn't testify about, that's why I went to the hospital. So there was no one to cross-examine. There are other witnesses who say, we went to the hospital in an ambulance afterwards. But again, you don't have that causal connection there. And I don't understand why the jurisprudence of this state should be fundamentally changed, why we should carve out an exception to any principle concerning the reliability on causation.
Well, in my concurrence in Coastal Tank Ships,
yes,
I said that such post hoc ergo proctor hoc reasoning is sometimes correct, sometimes fallacious. Proximity in time may suggest proximate cause when the harm from exposure is immediate, direct, and obvious, such as coughing or watering eyes from exposure to a chemical. But when it's cancer caused by a chemical, that's not an immediate, direct, or obvious. Why isn't that the right line, or was I wrong?
No, it's accurate, as far as it goes. We have been discussing now the very last vestige of where the question is, will we require some reliable causation evidence, or will we not? But as far as that's concerned, that's perfect.
I'm curious about one thing, just maybe off the beaten path a little bit. Did you argue this case in the El Paso Court of Appeals? It was tried in Harris County.
It was.
Then sent to El Paso pursuant to a docket equalization order?
Exactly.
You say the courts are deeply divided over the application of Morgan.
Yes.
Does the El Paso Court of Appeals differ from the Houston Courts of Appeal?
Absolutely.
On how they treat Morgan?
Absolutely. Both the Coastal decision and another decision of the first Court of Appeals say, we're not going Morgan. We have to have evidence of causation. My time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondents.
Please, the court, Mr. Kasasi will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Jay Asafi for the respondent. Corazon Labau Ferrer as heir and assignee of Arturo Labau. Petitioner, in this case, cites throughout his brief medical malpractice cases and products liability cases. I will agree 100% that in those type of cases, you need to hire an expert to show causation. In a medical malpractice case, you need to hire an expert to show causation as far as the breach of the standard of care. In a products liability case, you need to hire an expert to show the defect in a particular product. This is neither one of those. This is a car accident case involving trauma.
Didn't it create a problem, though, when the person involved in the accident is deceased and not subject to cross-examination as to his condition prior to the accident and during the accident?
Well, I would disagree with that because, number one, the link has been established. We have to show a link, a causal connection, a nexus. Car accident, the event. He complains of abdominal pains immediately taken by ambulance, taken to the hospital.
Understand that part.
Immediately taken into surgery.
That's the easy part. But the lingering hospital stay, and at some point, from my reading of this file, looks like that he did have some pre-existing conditions. And so at one point, there has to be a line drawn as to what was caused by the accident, if anything, and what wasn't.
Very good.
How do you get that out?
Very good point, because past medical history, when you're born until you die, you want to have past medical history. And again, the focus on past medical history was mainly with the atrial fibrillation and the heart disease. There was no event caused. We are not saying that he died as a result of a heart attack resulting in this car accident. So it is.
But the medical bills included treatment for lots of things that we're sure weren't caused by the accident.
Well, again, with the medical bills, once that first domino goes down, I can't say, well, domino 472 is the cause of it.
Well,
once that first initial...
But the problem with that is, there's a famous case, I don't have the name of it, from Fort Worth, where Fort Worth Court of Appeals affirmed that a car wreck caused cancer. Because the guy was in a car wreck and broke a limb, and they found cancer at the site of the break. Now, we know now what happened was the cancer had been there for a while, weakened the bone, and therefore it broke. So the break may have been caused by the accident, but cancer can't be caused by a car accident.
I will agree with you.
And so we've got to, on some of these things, well, we don't know precisely. I can't imagine how a car wreck causes renal failure, but I can't say it never would. Don't I need a doctor to help me decide that?
Thank you. You need an expert. I don't know what sodium chloride and safe set and isolation pump and phosphorus and ammonia. You need an expert. That's why the legislative intent in Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code 18.001 is a safety net, meaning that it allows the jury to consider the medical bills as reasonable and necessary. You're taking away the power of the jury, mainly saying that
No, but that was so you didn't have to call the doctor to prove up the bills. That doesn't mean that we can presume everything in there was caused as the act by what the plaintiff says it was.
Right. I will agree. It does not prove up causation. But what it does allow the jury to consider the medical bills as being reasonable and necessary. What the other side had to do was file a counter affidavit and saying which ones were not reasonable and necessary, hire an expert, and specify why they're not reasonable and necessary, and specify which bills are not reasonable and necessary and not related to the accident. We would then hire an expert and counter their part and say, well, these are reasonable and necessary, and that's why they're related to this car accident. When you go into the hospital, what they want you to do is basically break it down to every millisecond, from every bed sheet to every bedpan to every scalpel. When you go into a hospital, you see a number of doctors. When my dad went into the hospital for pneumonia, he saw about 20 doctors. I mean, I don't know how many doctors he saw, but I can tell you that an expert can be able to distinguish that out.
If we're talking about $250 in medical bills, I might agree with you. This is $1 million. This was not which I assume the plaintiff's attorney had on a fairly substantial contingency to take a big part of it. Why is it too much to ask for your $400,000 that you would hire a doctor to say renal failure was caused by this accident? Here's how.
Well, very simple. That once we have shown that causal link, we don't have to show beyond a reasonable doubt. We don't have to show an absolute certainty. We show that link. Car accident, he complains immediately of abdominal pain, immediately taken by ambulance to the hospital and immediately taken to the emergency room.
But in my car wreck case, the plaintiff immediately complained of pain where the cancer was, but that didn't mean the wreck caused the cancer.
Right. That's a different scenario. Even with the Sire case and the Burroughs case, with the polysporin, you need an expert to distinguish that link. In the other case with Morgan, that's a products case, the typewriter fumes. You need an expert to link that to the injuries. Here, it's trauma. It's like me going up and beating somebody upside the head with a bat, and then basically this guy suffers medical damages and brain injuries. Well, it's inferred that because of me knocking him with the bat, he's got trauma. I mean,
you say that the affidavits establish reasonableness and necessity of the charges, but that's as to the treatment that was provided. That doesn't necessarily mean, does it, that the treatment was provided because of the auto accident. Could have been a renal failure or hypertension. Yeah, it's reasonable and necessary for hypertension, but you still have to link the hypertension to the accident, and that's still your burden of proof as a plaintiff.
Texas pattern jury charge. There may be more than one proximate cause of an event. In other words, the jury can believe all of those expenses were related to this accident, some of them or none of them. They had the opportunity to file a counter affidavit. That's the intent of the legislature. The intent of the legislature was to have all this free-flowing and smooth. Instead of one-day trials, we'd have five-year trials. We'd have a room full of experts.
Let me ask you this then. We just held in Tony Gullo Motors versus Chapa. Seems to me the opposite of what you're arguing. You're arguing on attorney's fees, plaintiff's attorney could just lump them all in. It's up to the defendant's got to pick out which ones were related to unrecoverable fees and not. And we held no. Plaintiff's job is to pick through them and say these were related to recoverable trends, these are not. Why should it be different on medical expenses? Why shouldn't the plaintiff have to say these were related to the car wreck, these are not, rather than shifting that burden to the defendant?
In the Morgan case, in a personal injury case, the plaintiff typically alleges that the defendant's conduct caused an event, an automobile accident, a fall, or in this case, the release of chemical fumes, and that this event caused the plaintiff to suffer injuries for which compensation and damages should be paid. Thus, at trial, the plaintiff must establish two causal nexuses in order to be entitled to recovery, a causal nexus between the defendant's conduct and the event sued upon, and a causal nexus between the event sued upon and the plaintiff's injuries. Once again, car accident, complaining of abdominal injuries, immediately taken to the emergency room immediately and immediately taken into surgery. There's no gap. The link is all tied in, and therefore those medical expenses are reasonable and necessary, and as a result of this car accident. In a trauma case is very different than a products liability case and in a medical malpractice case. You need an expert to show the burden of standard of care. You need an expert. You can't just have a jury to say, well, what is the burden of care? Well, you don't know that, and you have to hire an expert.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. Would you agree that hypertension, for example, was not caused by the accident, that there were some conditions for which he was treated that were not caused by the accident?
There, and again, we're not even arguing hypertension. And
let me go. Would you agree or would you disagree with the statement that there were some conditions for which he was treated that were not caused by the accident?
Sure.
Okay. And I think the question we're troubled with is if you agree there were some that were not, and it would seem that you can almost let a jury know that you have to go to a hospital after an accident if you got cuts and bruises and banged up. How do we tell the difference between those? You have the burden of proof to prove which ones were. How do we know how to deal with those? You agree that some of them weren't caused.
And again,
and you agree that you have to prove causation.
Right. And again, this man is 86 years old, meaning that there may have been other factors in his past. We've all had past medical histories. And what's so interesting is when we talk about the expenses, Pacifico Ferrer, the other person that was in the car, he incurred about $4,600 worth of medical bills. But in his summary, past medical history talks about he had a history of high blood pressure, hepatitis. He had surgery in 1997, gallbladder surgery in 1975, and he had previous motor vehicle accidents. Well, they're not arguing this part. It's because it's about $4,600. There's no expert showing, how do I know that these were not from another car accident for him to suffer the injuries that he suffered? He was also taken by ambulance at the same time. So a jury can infer from the events, and the issue of sequence of events is very critical here. There's no gap in the sequence of events. Immediately, he's taken to the hospital, taken into emergency. Abdominal surgery. Once they open you up, there's always the issue of an organ failure, of an artery being busted, a capillary being busted. There's always that risk.
What happens if there is a gap? You have someone get injured and come out and say, look, I feel fine, just a little sore, and they go home, and a week later they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you have a rupture here, you have a break here. What happened to you?
That would be considered reasonable. I would think that within a week time, that if you start suffering some injuries, that would be considered reasonable. Now, maybe a year, that might not be reasonable. Here, there might have been a gap after he was done with the surgery. And within that gap, he started having some other problems. See, once that first domino is pushed, all of it else falls in line. And that's what we're saying here. I mean, yeah, he's 86 years old, and he could have had all kinds of problems. But it's that causal link, the initial event that caused him to have these serious injuries. So in his past, what's so funny is that there's no issue of abdominal issues. It's all about atrial fibrillation and heart attacks and all this other, some of the stuff I can't even pronounce. But here, what's so funny is that the nexus is right on point. Now,
in any event, irrespective of what the scenario would be, you would rely still on the Texas Civil Practice of Remedy Codes as to requiring the other side to bring in an expert to challenge the affidavits.
Right. And the deal is there is basically for the efficiency of the courts. Dallas Court of Appeals said, provides a significant of savings and time and cost to litigation, particularly in personal injury cases, by providing a means to prove up the reasonableness and necessity of the medical expenses. Again, instead of one-day trials, we'd have one-year trials. We would open the floodgates of backlog that would be unprecedented. What they want you to do, they want you to overturn the Texas Pattern Jury Charge. They want you to overturn Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code 18.001. They want you to overturn the power of the jury to be able to infer from the sequence of events. They want you to overturn basically everything that...
Why is that going to take a year to try? You call the the admitting doctor or whoever the main physician was, you take his or her deposition, and you say, which ones of these that he got all the treatment you did, the major things you did, which ones related to the car wreck, which didn't. And he says, well, this one, this one, this one, but not hypertension and kidney failure, or whatever he or she says. Why is that going to take a year?
That's not a problem. I want you to go over every one of these bills. I want you to have an expert for every one of these bills. In other words, for every pump that he had to endure, for every scaffolding that he used.
But your version is not going to save any time because you're saying the defendant's got to do all that. You just want to shift the time. Who takes up the jury time doing that?
No, it's not necessarily taking up the jury's time. What's
well, somebody's got to do it. I mean, if they gave him a tetanus shot in there just because it was time to reboost it, that's got to be taken out.
Right, but
we don't want to do that at trial. We don't want to do that on cross-examination with the jury there. Aren't we just picking between whether you do it or he does it before trial?
Well, again, what we're talking about here is independent causation, meaning that they have to show independent causation. In this court, the Supreme Court, slip opinion, case number 03-1128, in Dew versus Crown Derrick Erectors. The guy left the valve open. Vapors started coming out of it. Lightning came, struck it. There were some serious injuries. That defendant was still liable. Even though that independent cause of the lightning bolt hitting that was an independent cause that was still liable. The bottom line here, that liability is clear. The car accident, he incurred medical bills, he incurred injuries as a result of this car accident. There's no other independent cause. If there's independent causation, they need to show what the independent cause. What's the superseding cause? We're saying that there isn't. The jury, they went into the court, they argued without having an expert to file a counter affidavit, and they took a hit. You take a risk. You go into the court, the jury can believe all the bills, disbelieve them. They disbelieve the other side. So they took a hit. That's just the risk that you take. You always say when you go into court, you take a 50-50 risk. In Turner v. Peril, again, talks about the significance of moving things in a smooth fashion. And that's what we do, and that's what the legislative intent was. Now, the legislative intent also provided a safety vacuum, a safety net, meaning that if those bills are bogus, file a counter affidavit with an expert showing us which ones are not reasonable and were not necessary. And then we would then have to hire an expert to show that they were reasonable and necessary and they were related to the car accident.
But that's two different things. Whether a bill is reasonable and necessary is different from whether it was caused by the accident.
But we're saying that it was caused by the accident.
Where is the legislature passed a bill saying a medical records custodian can swear out an affidavit saying this was all caused by the accident? And that the jury, that's some evidence for a jury verdict. They've never said that. Because the fact of the matter is these are all signed by secretaries.
Right.
Which may be fine for the amount of the bill. Bill's not fraudulent.
Right.
But for causation, we don't want medical secretaries signing off.
Of course not. We're not saying that 18.01 speaks to causation. We've already proved up causation. Again, it's the car accident. We've proven up our part of causation. The other side says, no, it's something else. It's doctor assumption, and God from heaven's got to come down and show every organ and every muscle that was caused by something else. No, we've already proved up our part.
I think he's just saying that you need to carry your burden of proof. I mean, you can put in the records, that's fine, but you still have to link them to the accident. You're saying, well, because they drove down to the hospital in an ambulance, that proves it. And that might prove some of them, but there might be some in there that are not. And It seems to me, the plaintiff's burden of proof to establish where the link is for those particular charges.
But that's just it. We have proven our part. We have to show within a reasonable medical probability. We don't have to show an absolute certainty. We've done our part. They're saying it's something else. It's independent causation. What is it? They have to show. If these bills are not reasonable and necessary, hire an expert and show which ones are not reasonable and necessary. We then hire an expert and we show that they are and they're related to this accident. Causation has been established. I can understand what you're saying. 18.01 does not speak to causation, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying, did I establish a causal nexus? I did.
Well, if the burden is going to be pushed to the other side to challenge the reasonableness or perhaps the causation of any medical bills, why can't we just cut to the chase and now just say you have to have an expert? What's the difference other than the court giving better direction?
Well, again, you have to have an expert if you're not able to link the injury to the cause. In other words, with the CompuGraphic, all these other cases, medical malpractice, you have to have an expert. I will agree. I'm not going down Morgan's path. Meaning that with Morgan, with the vapors, I don't know if it was those vapors that caused it. It could have been something else. It could have been a myriad of other problems. No, the causal link within a reasonable medical probability. Again, we're not here on a reasonable doubt. We don't have to do this to an absolute certainty. We have done our part by showing the causal connection. That's what the law says. Now, what they're wanting us to do is to overturn Texas Civil Practice Remedies Code, Texas Pattern Jury Charge, whatever the jury is able to do as far as their wide latitude. What about the pain and suffering? He yelled out in pain at the time of the accident. So we're not going to award him pain and suffering because we need an expert? No, we've done our part. Thanks for your time.
Mr. Roach, I have one question. Why wouldn't, if you're right, why wouldn't the plaintiff be entitled to a new trial instead of the judgment that the trial court entered?
If I'm right that there is no legally insufficient evidence of causation, then that's a render, Your Honor.
But under Morgan, there would have been, or at least there arguably would have been. You're asking us to overturn Morgan and reverse it. And
right.
Under that standard, before this case was tried, it seems to me that some of that $1 million in medical expenses would be some evidence of causation just based on the plaintiff's testimony.
Interestingly, Your Honor, with the conversation we've had today, I think is 180 degrees opposite of Texas law. Texas law has never presumed that there is hospitalization causation in every auto accident case. Or that there's a presumption that. That has never been Texas law. Instead, we require causation. And when you don't prove causation by legally sufficient evidence, it's always been a render. At the time of Morgan as well.
Well, let's assume you have an auto accident, as Justice Green posited. You get out there and somebody's leg is turned 90 degrees in the middle of the thigh. And they load him in the ambulance and take him to the hospital. We're not going to let a jury say that that person needed some medical treatment?
Once upon a time, and it wasn't that long ago, Your Honor, 1984, this court said we can tell that being 2 inches away from a typesetting machine, it was the exact same thing, Your Honor. You thought you knew back then, and you think you know right now, and the truth is otherwise.
You don't see a difference between fumes and a broken leg? I mean, a leg that's turned 90 degrees in the middle of a thigh immediately after an automobile accident?
This court made no distinction between those two in 1984.
Yep. Do you think there should be a difference in those two?
I think that there is a difference. I don't believe it's a difference that should change Texas jurisprudence, that you have to create an exception for it. It is unnecessary to do that. Why not? I mean, the law in Texas has always been, up until Morgan, you have to have expert testimony of some sort on medical causation. Why shouldn't that still be the law? Morgan changed that and said, sometimes it's easy to tell. Well, the truth is, easy to tell ain't necessarily truth. Okay? It was fumes back then. No way in the world does that decision withstand Havner, which is exposures. Okay? So the jurisprudential concept is the same. And the exception, just like the exception in Morgan swallowed the rule, the exception that you're being asked to make for either hospital expenses or for medical affidavits is the same thing. You are undercutting your jurisprudence fundamentally if you say there are some situations where we don't care about reliability, where post hoc reasoning is okay. You don't have to disprove alternative causes.
You don't think it's significant that one's medical malpractice or products liability and the other one's not?
I truly don't, because where you're talking about medical causation, it's common to both. We're talking about whether an injury creates, you know, problems with your kidney, with your lung, with your breathing, with your stomach. Okay? It's all the same. We're talking about something that is outside the kin of a juror. It's outside my kin, and I used to do medical malpractice defense. I can't say what was caused by an accident and what wasn't. I don't understand how a juror can. We don't presume that for any other area of the law.
If a sponge is left in a patient after surgery and it's found, and the only evidence of that at trial is the medical record, it's an X-ray. Hold it up. Let's say it's a scalpel.
Sure.
It's easier to see. And there's a knife inside the person. Do you need an expert?
You have to, part of the Reisitzer law, and this was something that Justice Heck mentioned in his Ridgeway concurrence, the law still requires you to exclude other plausible causes.
Scalpel inside a person?
You'd be still
after a surgery?
Too rigorous? Can't possibly be necessary? Why can't we let jurors assume that the scalpel's there? Because we care about reliability that much. And we should continue to care about reliability that much. We have changed Texas law because of reliability. Are we going to say that it wasn't really important? That it only matters in some kinds of cases, product cases, toxic cases, and it doesn't matter as a principle? I suggest to this court that stare decisis allows you to overturn prior decision only where the principles are that important, and this principle is that important. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Roach. That concludes this argument and all arguments this morning, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh yeah, oh yeah.